Okay, let's pick up our last part of this lecture and power through to the end. One note, we finished section two. We're not going to try to do section three because I do most of it at the board. We do have some PDF pages that I'll just briefly explain starting on page 51. It's a neuroscience study out of SRI a few years back. There's a publication, I believe, linked. Brain volume data. And what we have is males and females. If you look at the plot of page 51, with each person having a few years of observations of brain volume at very disparate years. So a lot of small pieces, growth curves, and how you ask differences in males and females, how you ask differences, how things evolve over age between 10 and 70 is the question. It's a complicated enough one that I say at the time, if you can do this, you can do anything. And there's real plots and basically end up with a three-wave, a three-component combination. And it's more than we can try to do in this format. But it's good to see that it exists. So we are going to start out on page 56 of the PDF is the last section, section four, data for designed experiments. And I say basics because we are limited on our time. We're getting pretty close to the two-hour mark by the time we're done with just this little bit. So we're going to relearn in the first example, dye stuff, how to do one-way analysis of variance with random factor. And that's the dye stuff data from the beginning of Bates's book. There's a couple of different collections of Bates's book. I think this, where we are on page 56, came from the full collection. You have it in individual chapters these days. So dye stuff is there. It's used by Bates, and then we will do our own analyses of it. So it's 30 observations. We've got six different batches. Variation of batch to batch in the quality of an intermediate product, H acid. Towards the variation in the yield of the dye stuff, naphthalene black 12B. I think that's pretty black. In experiment, six samples of the intermediate representing different batches of works manufacture were obtained, and five preparations of the dye stuff were made in the laboratory from each sample. So you've got a factor with six levels and five replications within each level of the factor. So 30 observations all again, and you need to know what batch it came from and what the yield was. So this is one-way analysis of variance. We assume the batches were chosen at random. There's nothing systematic about it, and they don't exhaust the population of batches. Therefore, the outcome grams of standard color is a measured outcome that we won't dwell on. It gives us a nice little thing. Here is Bates's plot of it. Batches A through F. E has the highest level, it seems, and F has the lowest level. You can see there's a good deal of variation between within batches and also some between batches. And we might want to estimate those variance components. And one way analysis of variance, one way of getting at things with a little bit of tweaking, LMER will do it for you. So here we go. Dye stuff single classification. It is the Rugosa dye stuff session we're looking at on page 58. And we'll do one run through, then we'll come back and do a little more with variance components. So we have, if we do an STR structure, data dye stuff, we get a quick description. We have A, B, C, D, E, F at six, and the yield. And so if we take a look at and look at the mean levels within each batch, T apply is a good way to do that. There are other ways of doing it. You can see that E has the highest, 1600, and F has the lowest, 1470. You can also do a five-number summary of each batch. That'll give you all the data. And the medians are useful and tell you the same story as the means do. E is the highest. F compares to be the lowest. So way back when you took your introductory statistics course, for example, Stat 141 that I have taught here many years, which is introductory statistics for biology, you would run a one-way analysis of variance, get 5 degrees of freedom for the 6 batches, 24 degrees of freedom for error or residuals, and you'd see there's a significant difference between batches. Okay, that's all well and good. So there is some differences, even though I chose them at random. There does seem to be more variability in the yields than maybe you'd really like. And that's what you learn from one-way analysis of variance. It makes a difference what batch you're in. There's a little more we can do, and we'll do that when we come back to it. Now, since we know this wonderful tool, LMER, let's apply it to everything. And so we run what we called FM1, that's Bates' usual notation. Yield is our outcome. We want to know the mean within each batch. So one bar batch will give us the mean. That gives us Y bar. There's no predictive variable. And we have an intercept, but that'll be implicit. So this will give us the differences between the mean batches for dye stuff data. And so if we run a summary on that, we see its yield, and we want the mean for each batch. And we get random effects, the variance component between batches, which is 1764, and the variability within batches, 2451. Notice that matches exactly what good old one-way analysis of variance gave us for the residuals. LMER also gives us fixed effects. That's the average over batches of the batch average. That's going to be basically the average of the 30 observations since they're all the same size. And we could get in confidence interval, due to old names equals false, get a confidence interval for this variance component, which is supposed to represent the variability of the batch means. Notice 1764 is the number, and here in the square root scale, you could square these and get the endpoints of the confidence interval for the variance, or standard deviation 42. You can see it's in between there. It's not quite as it shouldn't be for a variance, which is not going to be symmetric. These confidence interval endpoints are a little bit offset to the right. We get a confidence interval for the 2451 square root metric, etc. So we get something where the next step, after we look at some graphics, will be to link up and explain what the 1764 is in terms of traditional one-way analysis of variance. And that's a fun little exercise where I notice you get to see what my handwriting looks like. And you'll be happy, maybe, that I'm not at the board writing. Okay, additional things we can do with LMER is take a look at the plot of the random effects. That's the deviation of each batch from the overall mean. Fixed effects is the overall mean. And here's our plot of random effects, and you can see the really air differences between the batches, even with a confidence interval around each random effect. You can see there's a good deal of non-overlap. So batches do differ. Okay. Then I came back, and I might have done this the next week originally, because I knew there was more to say. Here's our simple analysis of variance. So in the middle of the page, we're on page 61 of the PDF. And we're just going to take another look at our one-way ANOVA. So our AOV is simply gave us a mean square for batch with 5 degrees of freedom of 11, 272. What in the world is that? We got from LMER, which purports to tell us things we want to know, an estimate for the variance component of how variable the batches are, and we also saw from the confidence interval that that variability, the confidence interval for that variability does not include zero. We do it around the standard deviation, and you can see it's well away from zero. So there is significant variability amongst batches, and we saw that. We were able to test, even in good old analysis of variance, that the means aren't all the same. How much do they vary? 1764 is the estimate for that variance component, standard deviation 42, in the metric of the yield, is what LMER gave us with a confidence interval. How does that relate to what one-way analysis of variance originally tried to tell us? Tried to tell us the means differ, at least. Here it goes, and you can see why typing is better than my scrawling. Okay, so in good old analysis of variance talk, we had expected mean squares. And the expected mean square for for mean square error is the inherent variability, sigma square, plus how variable the means are. And in random effects, that would be sigma square plus the number within cell, if it's approximately balanced, times the variance component that we're trying to get at, which LMER gave us, the 1764. We have six groups, five per groups. If we take this expected mean square, we know what the estimate for sigma square is, 2450. If we substitute in this, does good old one-way analysis variance give us a good estimate of the variance component, or at least does it match up with LMER? So if we plug in these numbers, this sum of squares batch, mean square batch, mean square residual, do the substitution, solve for sigma square u, which is in the red circle, we get 1764.4. LMER gave us 1764. That's pretty good to arithmetic, and we have a confidence interval for it. So LMER does what we could get from one-way random effects ANOVA, if we worked at it a bit, plus the confidence interval. So it's doing the same sorts of things we yearn to do with one-way analysis of variance, and it does it for us in one shot with good information on estimation precision. Isn't that great? So we relearned how to do what we knew how to do anyways, and bigger tool. Hooray. Okay, on to our final example of lecture two, the penicillin data, a two-way ANOVA. There's also PACE and rat brain in addition to the penicillin data we could look at in Bates's book. We're just going to take a quick look at penicillin, show you two-way random effects ANOVA done by LMER, and compare it to standard AOV. Doug Bates has a nice presentation, and I have an R session, which picks up some of that. Random effects recap is chapter one, chapter two. So we just have a little more to go, and we're done with lecture two. So cross-grouping factors and the penicillin data, a little bit of a head freezer, but I think we can explain it. So you're trying to figure out if we're making consistent batches of penicillin. And I don't know whether these data came from before or after the time that China made it all. So I don't have the bona fides there. But what we do is we have six samples of penicillin. We want to see whether they're consistent or not. And the way we test it is over a bunch of different plates. And basically, the outcome measure is the zone of no growth around where we put in the penicillin. That's a measure of the potency. And that's top page 24, goes through that, little cylinders and pots. So we're mainly interested in, is there variability across samples? That's not such a great thing. We don't care about variability across plates, but we're doing one sample. We're doing all six samples in each of the plates. That's how come we get 144 observations, 24, 6. We have one replication of each. And diameter is our outcome. That's the zone of potency. So stronger the potency, the bigger diameter we have of no growth. The plate is one of our experimental pieces, and sample is our main issue. Each sample is used on each plate. They're crossed and completely crossed. And he has discussion of that in the book. And then there's a lovely presentation where he has additional pictures, fixed and random effects, models with cross simple random effects of penicillin. I like his plot on page 65 PDF. You can take a look at it and see how it's done. We'll take a look at our session and some comments on page 66 on cross random effects, difference between experimental and hierarchical linear models, and things like that. Recap of the penicillin model. We're going to do a analysis where plate and sample means are crossed, and we're going to see that's on page 67. That's our basic LMER model to random effects terms. And we're going to get variance components for each, and we're going to compare that with two-way analysis of variance. And so here is the penicillin data, my R session on page 68, which I should be able to explain. I'll make it look a little bigger here. Okay, Bates' book. Yeah, notes, Faraway is various. It has a different data set of the same name. All these data sets are in LME4. I think I have a little slide that shows you the various data sets in LME4. Here it is. Data sets in LME4. Data package LME4. This is a useful type of R command. The pop-up will give you dye stuff, which we just used, penicillin, sleep study, which we have used, CBPP, bovine pneumonia in Ethiopia. Well, it's a WHO thing, perhaps. I'll leave it there. We don't do verbal aggression because that's banned at Stanford. So here's the penicillin data. It's boring, but it gives us a simple structure. So immediately I create a change of the data name. I call it PN because who wants to try to type penicillin twice? You'll never do it. Well, maybe it's an age-related thing. Okay, so structure tells us we have 24 by 6, gives us 144. I'm almost sure. And the diameter is our measured outcome. If we do an X-tabs, which is the way Bates likes to array things, so do it. You can see you have one observation within each of the crossings of sample, which is what we're interested in, and plates. We didn't run out of letters, so we could do 24 of those. So we attach it. And if we want to take a look at the samples, you can see they do vary a bit. 19 is a good deal different from 25. So there is something going on. So we're going to fit a model with just two main effects, no interaction, because we have one observation per cell, though we could do a Tukey kludge on that. And we have two factors, plate and sample. Those are randomly chosen. And so that's our FM2. Yeah, that's going to be our LMER model. If we do a summary, our random effects are what's of interest. The fixed effects, just the average overall of the samples. We don't really care about that because that's not of interest. We're interested in whether samples differ, whether they have a non-zero variance component. And at least the point estimate is 3.73 for variance of samples. And if we do a confidence interval for that, we can see even in the standard deviation metric, that's way away from zero. So samples do differ. Again, I don't know whether that's made in the USA or not, the samples. They do differ. That's not such a good thing, I believe, although I don't profess to be a quality control person. I think you'd like them to be the same. So that's where we are. One useful thing to do is, what would we do if we hadn't taken this course? Oh, my God. something we don't want to contemplate, but we would run a two-way analysis of variance, diameter, plate, and sample on the PN data, because I can't spell penicillin, and you'd see samples had a big mean square and 2 times e to the minus 16. That's a whole lot of stars. So we know that samples differ. And that was apparent by looking at it. And what we can do further from LMER is to get a better fix on that, a good point estimate for the variance or standard deviation of the sample, and get a confidence interval for the standard deviation of the sample. The endpoints, you could just square them to get a confidence interval for the variance. We can look at the random effects. Also a good thing. We could go through the exercise, but it would require reading more of my handwriting of using expected mean squares from a two-way analysis of variance to get isolate the mean the variance component for samples. It is possible to do it if you go back to Niederer Wasserman or my old Psych 252, which is in better hands these days. You'll see you could do those calculations in the old days, and you'll come out with something close to LMER, but here you get it and a confidence interval for a lot less work. So LMER can help you do the things you would have done anyways with a little more tedium and a little less precision. Take a look at the random effects. And if you want to take a look at the RANFs, QQ plot of the RANFs, page 70 is the code. And you could do that and take a look at what you'd get. I didn't include it here. I'll leave it for you to discover. That's very exciting. So that concludes our quick tour of designed experiments. We usually don't have time to do much more, although it would be quite useful to do it, but we gave you a touch. And then the last pages here I see, I could have cut them out. I always try to provide some overlap. Where we're going next week is generalized linear models. So you have the first few pages starting on page 71. So we really only had 70 pages of lecture. That's good. And so that's where we'll pick up week 3. Generalized linear models, just like GLM, extends LM to counts and proportions. Family binomial, family Poisson. You'll see GLMER works the same way. And there's a nice little description in the Encyclopedia of Statistics Behavioral Science, which is linked in week 3. So that's our overlap for week 3. And so we will conclude week 2. I think we're pretty close to just about 2 hours here. So let's call it a day and leave this for your enjoyment. Thank you very much.